Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Finally starting to feel like summer outside. It's going to get to 97 today. And, of course, summer leads into summer camp when football returns, which is usually in August. So we're still about 2 months away from that. But the college football season, when summer comes right around the corner, you start seeing all the magazines that list the top players. And this year, for the first time in quite a while, Chris, we've got a lot of top quarterbacks who are going to make this season exciting to watch.
Indeed. Brought up Lamar Jackson, reigning Heisman Trophy winner, coming back to Louisville, and he's not even in, what, usually the top three quarterbacks that are discussed going into the 2017 college football season. That's when you know it's something.
Well, the top discussed, who's discussing him and why? Like, if you're talking about the NFL draft, might be different than the three people that you're talking about for college football. And a lot of it's the team. When you talk about top three in the NFL draft, Josh Allen of Wyoming's name finds his name on the list, where I don't know that anybody's talking about Josh Allen collegiately as much because Wyoming's not expected to be a top 10 team.
Yeah, I just follow people who talk a lot about football on the social media streets, and Josh Allen's name comes up quite a bit. So whether it's college football or NFL or draft or forecasting, his name's mentioned. You got, of course, Darnold at USC. Baker Mayfield's been around a while. Josh Rosen at UCLA. People expect to take that leap. And, yeah, the Heisman Trophy winner from a season ago. So it got us to thinking as we put the poll up on our Twitter page at KTIK 93.1 FM. Quarterbacks next year, we put four up there. What we kind of determined were the top four of quarterbacks that a lot of people are talking about from the collegiate angle, and which one of those were you looking forward to the most to watch next season. So the four we put up there were Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, and I was pretty surprised with the results of this.
Sam Darnold with 63% of the vote, outdistancing Lamar Jackson of Louisville, who was second with 26% of the vote, and Baker Mayfield and Josh Rosen each were in single digits in the percentage of people who would most want to see them.
Yeah, that was surprising to me. I thought it'd be a lot closer. Darnold came on late last year and really put up good numbers for USC, including a monster bowl game. But, I mean, we're talking about a returning Heisman Trophy winner, and he wasn't within 35 points of a quarterback from USC who isn't the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. I voted for Jackson in this, and I'm surprised there was no traction for Rosen or Mayfield. It was basically Darnold or bust. When you get two-thirds of the votes, pretty much, that's telling you something. And for me, I guess the conclusion that I gather is USC is USC. Mm-hmm. Like Southern Cal, say what you want about them being down for a decent period. I mean, they really haven't been consistently good since Pete Carroll was there. But it is something when there is hope at USC and it attracts casual college football fans to want to see what's going on there. And if they have a quarterback that has the ability to bring them back on that national stage where they're competing for a college football playoff spot, that makes the most amount of people interested in the sport. So as good as Lamar Jackson was and all the highlight plays that he made last year and the accolades that he was able to rack up, I guess that pales into comparison to, well, you're the man at USC, and USC is supposed to be pretty good.
We're talking college football quarterbacks. We will hear from Paul Rogers in Louisville. He's a longtime voice of the Cardinals. We'll find out what makes Lamar Jackson the player that got the Heisman, a guy that really is the best running back and the best quarterback on the Cardinals team. He'll come up in about 10 minutes or so today as we start our tour of college quarterbacks.
On this note, I think just coming across is seeing on the social media pages, is this true fish about Bob
Stoops?
Yep,
it's reported by News Oklahoma. Bob Stoops is going to tell the team he's retiring today.
Wow.
Immediately?
Yep.
What else is said there?
All it said is the offensive coordinator, Lincoln Riley, is expected to take over as the head coach.
Wow.
So Bob Stoops,
that's a bomb
after 18 years as the head coach.
All right, immediate takeaway. Bob, do you have something on this? I mean, Baker Mayfield is one of the guys we mentioned. Oklahoma is always supposed to be in the Big 12 championship race, of course, and if you're a favorite in the Big 12, you are a team that can make the college football playoff. We know the talent's there. We know, of course, Boise State, one of their biggest moments against Oklahoma. This is pretty surprising, and again, my thing is he's retiring now.
That to me is
what's
bizarre.
The timing of these things are just strange. Like, what was it, a couple of days ago,
Well, Thad Mata was fired at Ohio State.
Yeah, and you think, well, shouldn't have you have made that decision earlier on? But apparently it had to do with recruiting and everything along those lines. I'm just waiting for, like, the next step. Is there something else that's going to come with this Oklahoma story? And you don't want to speculate too grandly, but I didn't see this coming at all. There wasn't any whispers of something like this.
Absolutely none, at least none that I'd ever heard of. Bob Stoops, you know, a fixture at Oklahoma. It's not like he's leaving to take a job with the Cincinnati Bengals or with another college. He's not that old. If I had to guess, the first thing that would come to mind would be, does he have health issues? And that would be my greatest concern when anybody retires abruptly. Is there, is there some physical ailment that's going to cause them to want to take a leave of absence or stop coaching?
I'm trying to look up how old is he.
I was going to say he's south of 60.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. There has to be another layer to this. Like, there's going to be information about, you know, whether it's a health thing, which you would hope that somebody in the mid-50s in age wouldn't have something health-related that drastically that would make you step down immediately in June before a college football season. Like, that seems strange. Is it... There's nothing that I saw that reached, like, Baylor level of scandal
or even Ole Miss level with money. And, you know, Ole Miss is under the gun right now with the NCAA as far as, you know, allegations that they paid players and the coach, you know, whether Freeze should be in or out as the head coach. Nothing like that at Oklahoma.
There's no, like, opening somewhere else where you would think maybe you'd step away to take that one. So, yeah. I'm trying to figure this one out, Fish. I wonder where you're thinking.
Actually,
this.
Twitter says he's going to go coach Ohio State basketball.
Okay, there we go.
That's
the only opening.
Always
that's
thought
there
he
right
had a
now.
Chance to do a basketball job and wants to go there.
That's the only opening that I see. Yeah, that's surprising. Now, how about
maybe he's going to take Leon Rice? We got one assistant basketball coaching job. Maybe that one too.
Now you said that the offensive coordinator is going to take over.
Yeah.
And how long has the offensive coordinator been there?
He's been at Oklahoma for 2 years.
Ooh. Yeah, this, and that's on an interim basis, not permanent, correct?
That is so far. And Bruce Feldman just tweeted out he can confirm this is happening. Bob Stoops is going to retire effective today, immediately. Lincoln Riley will take over as the head coach for Oklahoma.
To the point where that's going to be a fun, whenever they have the full cycle to determine who they want to bring in. Because I can't imagine that somebody who's been the offensive coordinator for a couple of years is automatically going to be given this job long term. It's just that good of a job where you're going to be able to get some people for that one.
Yeah, but what happens if he goes, if this Lincoln Riley goes 12-0, wins?
Well, okay, you basically have to. Like, what do you have to do at Oklahoma to definitively keep your job when it's that open?
That's a great question. 10 Big 12 titles. Out of 10s and 12s. If you don't win the conference, you're out, first of all. That's for openers. For openers. Second, I'd have to say that you probably have to get to the college football playoff and you might have to win a game.
Yeah, I think that's at least you got to be playing in that college football national championship, or else they're going to say, well, there's some other coach that could have gotten us to be playing in the college football championship. I'm with you. The expectations would be that high. The talent is that much. Your quarterback is about as established as any quarterback that there is right now in college football. It's just for him to retire at 56 years old when you have one of the, five best jobs in college football?
Easily 10, I would think. You know, I would think easily in the top 10, quibbling over maybe where you want to live.
That's astounding to me. To the point where, I'm now you got to follow to see what the next domino was with this. So there's a disagreement with them and with him and somebody else higher up in the administration. Like, that's the only reason, because that's not normal. 56 years old, you are, you might be considered young for a coach just to have a job like that at Oklahoma. That's young. So,
Oklahoma, by the way, if you look at it, their best coaches they've hired young. Bud Wilkinson got the job when he was 31. Chuck Fairbanks, 34. Barry Switzer, 36. Bob Stoops was an old-timer when he got the job. He was 39.
Do you think Bob Stoops is a good coach? That's the one thing.
Like a game coach?
He gets criticism because they have those losses that are unexplainable at times. Like, there's Oklahoma has the path to being in the national champ, the old BCS. They have the path to the top two, and then they get that unexplainable loss. They haven't won it with the college football playoff system yet either, and they got there but haven't exactly, won it all.
You've got a lot of edges at Oklahoma that make you a good coach as far as like recruiting and money and support. If you said best tactician, best somebody you just think on a game plan, I don't think his name would come up in the first five or six that I would throw out.
Because he's 56. Assuming that this isn't his next job, he's going to want to go somewhere else, right? Like, there would be, plenty of programs that could do a lot worse than bringing in Bob Stoops, like, even tomorrow, if somebody wanted to do some movement. So it is strange to have a coaching carousel-type move. And, again, it's not probably going to create an opening for now because they have an interim there that they're going to say, hey, take this for at least this season. But when Bob Stoops is on the market, that's going to put a lot of pressure on all the coaches out there that are on the hot seat, because if he's available to be brought in, there's going to be some openings next offseason.
Assuming that there's not a reason that Bob Stoops is stepping down, i.e. in trouble with the NCAA, in trouble with the law, health issues that would force him out of the business.
So Les Miles is available, right?
Yes.
Still. Bob Stoops.
Yes.
Now available.
Les Miles is older.
Yeah. But talk about accomplished coaches who are,
some in Louisiana might debate whether how accomplished Les Miles is. I don't think as many would debate Bob Stoops.
Sure.
Get the best of Sports Radio The Ticket with the must-have ticket app at iTunes or KTIK.com. Access social media posts, live broadcast, featured interviews, and conversations, as well as entire shows. It's an Idaho sports lover's dream. You can download it today at Sports Radio The Ticket app. How good is Lamar Jackson, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner? We'll find out next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
They're in Knoll territory at the 47. He didn't get it. Jackson off and flying. Jackson dips by a defender, scoots ahead to the five, spins, touchdown. He stayed upright as he dodged and spun and whirled and faked guys all over the field.
And that is Paul Rogers, the voice of the Louisville Cardinals on the Louisville Radio Network, joining us on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris on Sports Radio The Ticket. Paul, sounds like you had a lot of good plays to call with Mr. Lamar Jackson getting the Heisman Trophy and leading Louisville to a good season.
Yeah, when you asked me if I had a highlight to send you, I thought, oh my gosh, where would I begin? But there were a lot of them, and he certainly gave us some thrills, and that was one of my favorites. That was in that blowout win against Florida State that just left us all spinning in disbelief that day. He just had a spectacular, certainly early part of the season. Things leveled off there late in the year, but he had put up such ridiculous numbers early on that no one really caught up to him when people, I think, were kind of looking to see who else might be worthy, and Deshaun Watson, came on late. But Lamar had a special season last year, that's for sure.
Now, was that season as much of a surprise to the people at Louisville than it was to the nation that was watching him for kind of the first times during this season?
Well, yes and no. I mean, nobody thought he would do that. People in Louisville had seen glimpses of him and thought he could be a pretty special talent. He showed those kind of elusive moves and his quickness during his freshman year, but certainly not on a consistent basis. And then he did finish up the year, came in and had a blockbuster game against Kentucky in the regular season finale, and then another great performance against Texas A&M in the Music City Bowl. So people were pretty encouraged about what they saw and were looking forward to the year, but nobody could have predicted the kind of numbers he ended up putting up.
You mentioned Deshaun Watson early. You guys played Clemson, also in the ACC, had a shootout with them, losing by just a touchdown. Compare the two quarterbacks. I mean, the league had two of the best in college football last year.
Yeah, Deshaun was definitely more polished, more experienced. He's a little bigger. Lamar, it was quicker. Deshaun certainly was a mobile quarterback, but he just had a much more refined game. He had a better touch, an overall better arm, I think. Lamar has all the tools. He just needs to get a little more experience, learn the game from a mental standpoint a little bit. His decision-making needs to improve. He's got a great arm, but he needs to learn when and how to throw the right balls all the time. But the one thing he has that almost nobody has is that kind of speed and quickness and elusiveness. So they were different types of quarterbacks, but the main advantage Watson had really was just a little more maturity and experience.
Now, I mean, while we're comparing Lamar Jackson at Louisville to other quarterbacks in the past, I mean, how about this comparison to Teddy Bridgewater? And when you're, you know, talking with or hearing sound or hearing audio of the different defensive coordinators that Louisville's facing, what are some of the differences and what's tougher to prepare for?
Teddy, I think, was more of your typical quarterback. He had some elusiveness, and while he wasn't as quick as Lamar, he had great escapability and could have run probably for more yardage than he did. But that just wasn't his game. He was much better at standing in the pocket, making his reads, rather than scrambling around forever. He'd just throw the ball away. He was more of your textbook pocket quarterback. But he had great, just phenomenal arm too. And I didn't know if I could see one better than Teddy. And then Lamar, the season he had last year, it eclipsed him statistically. But still, there was a certain maturity with Teddy Bridgewater and overall game knowledge that is the kind of thing that Lamar needs to learn.
We're visiting with Paul Rogers. He's the voice of the Louisville Cardinals. You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM. The Ticket. It's the start of our two-week journey to take a look at the best quarterbacks in college football. Paul, when you look at the teams defending Louisville, it would seem to me that it's almost unfair that Louisville has 12 players on the offensive side of the ball, because not only is Lamar Jackson their best passer, but he's also their best runner. How do you see teams defend them differently than some of the other teams that, you know, in the conference that they play when you don't have the quarterback as your leading rusher?
Well, and there's even an addition to that. You know, when you have that type of quarterback, then everybody has to be aware of him, and you have to have, sometimes teams will elect one guy who just stays with him no matter what. But beyond that, I mean, there were times when schematically defenses had him stopped and somehow he would slip through cracks, and that's what would leave coaches befuddled. I mean, they'd come out of the game saying, hey, we did everything we wanted to do. He just beat us. And that's the extra dimension that he adds. You've got a quarterback that you have to account for in your run defense and in your pass defense, and just be aware of the fact that even if you do it right, you still may be wrong.
So how, when you know, take a look at Lamar Jackson, when coming off the Heisman Trophy winning season, and a lot of the conversation coming into 2017 about quarterbacks, it doesn't seem like he leaps to the top of the page. Like, how strange is that when you have the guy who won the Heisman last year, and people are talking about Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen and some of these other guys?
It is odd, but I do think it's sort of understandable. Let's face it, he did not finish the season off in grand style. But I'll give him a little bit of a pass on it, because it seemed like as the season wore on, the offensive line wore down. In the last three games, he just had no protection. He just could hardly breathe. They had the blowout loss to Houston. I think he got sacked 11 times, then lost the regular season finale to their arch rival Kentucky, although he actually had an okay game. He did throw some interceptions, but his other numbers were pretty good. And if he had not fumbled late in the game, which set up Kentucky's winning field goal, they might have won it. And then the same thing kind of happened in the bowl game against LSU. So, he didn't finish the year in grand style. I think people looked at him maybe as a little bit of a fluke. I certainly would not go that far, because he does possess the skills. But the numbers he put up early in the year were so preposterous, you just couldn't maintain that standard. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think as the season wore on, people were kind of looking for someone else, but really no one else, several players had some good games, but no one person you could turn to and say, there's a guy that's better than Lamar. So now to start fresh, I think people are assuming that he won't be as good as he was early last year, and they're looking at other directions. I'm not sure he will win the Heisman again. In fact, if I had to predict, I'd say he probably won't. That doesn't mean he won't have as good or better a season, because I just think with his maturity and the way Louisville's going to scheme with their overall game and not have to depend so much just on him, that he probably won't put up those kind of numbers, but I think still can be as good or maybe a better quarterback.
So how does he get better? Where are the ways that Coach Petrino and people you've talked to see him as a junior? He was a sophomore last year, but as a junior, how do they see him being better this season?
Two things in my mind, primarily, and one is just more consistency in his passing game. He has a strong arm, but sometimes throws would get away from him. Sometimes he didn't have the right touch on the shorter passes. And his overall mental grasp of the game, not being so eager to run, but stand in the pocket a little bit longer, be willing to just throw the ball away sometimes and come back for another play rather than always scrambling around. Those would be the two main things I think he needs to do, just an overall a mental awareness of the game and a little more consistency on his passing touch.
Paul, thanks so much for your time, being our first stop on our quarterback chase in the early part of the summer. I think we've got some good ones, and you're going to have some fun, I think, with Jackson again this year.
Yeah, we're looking forward to another go-around. Hopefully, we'll be in the hunt again.
All right, Paul, thanks so much for your time.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
And I do think he's probably right on the money. Probably, maybe he'll be a better quarterback, but numbers may not be as good. I mean, the numbers he had last year, especially when you threw the running numbers in, gaudy.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Heisman Trophy is almost like a narrative type award anyway. Like, you have to have a story attached to it, like a climb, a moment. People talk about things other than just raw numbers. And I have a feeling once he was built up to be as big as he was last season at times, the more fun thing to do next season is going to be talking about how he's not meeting whatever expectation that he set highly for this season based on what he did last year. So I have a feeling like it will be other guys who we talk about more in a positive light than Jackson. Doesn't necessarily mean he would have a significantly worse season. That's just how this game is played.
Tomorrow, our quarterback tour will take us to Los Angeles. We'll check in on Josh Rosen of UCLA. Matt Stevens, quarterback there in the 80s now on their broadcast team, will join us to break him down. The Game Changer in Extreme Competitive Kayaking is coming June 15th to the 17th to the North Fork of the Payette River. See extreme kayak racing at this annual world-class event showcasing the best big water paddlers. Brought to you by Toyota, one of the top sponsors of the North Fork. Start with the awards ceremony at the Egyptian Theater in downtown Boise. It's Thursday, June the 15th. Details available now at ktik.com. Fish, we've got an update. What is next?
Well, Boise State is their opponent for the Mountain West Missouri Valley Conference Challenge, plus a new associate head coach. The big news of the day, Bob Stoops retiring and Oklahoma not replacing him with an interim coach. That's coming up next on the Sports Update on Idaho Sports Talk. And the Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Big Judd's. Want to make your favorite Big Judd's burger a salad? Just ask them. Try any world-famous Big Judd burger as a salad today. Big Judd's on Overland near Eagle Road and on Protest Hill near Boise State. Well, Boise State has their opponent for the upcoming Mountain West versus Missouri Valley Conference Challenge. The Broncos will host Loyola of Chicago on November 28th in Taco Bell Arena. Other Boise State basketball news, Leon Rice announced yesterday that Phil Beckner has been promoted to associate head coach. Beckner will join us at 2 o'clock to talk about his promotion. Now we get to the big news of the day. Broke about 30 minutes ago. Bob Stoops announced he is retiring as the head coach of Oklahoma, effective immediately. Lincoln Riley, the offensive coordinator for the last 2 years, will take over. And according to Bruce Feldman on Twitter, this is not an interim tag for Riley. He's been groomed to be the head coach ever since he stepped on campus.
If you'd have told me this morning that somebody was going to retire in college football, I'll give you 10 guesses. Without, like, not in that league or questions, but just guessing 10 names.
Bill Snyder.
Yeah, that would probably be one I would have had.
You think at least yeah. Bill Snyder.
Bill Snyder would be the number one. Like, if somebody had to retire in college football in the Big 12, it's absolutely Bill Snyder.
But I would, if you gave me 10 guesses, I would not have come to Bob Stoops.
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, this is rough for the whole, you know, you sign a board to join a program. You're not there to play for a coach, but, I mean, you do sign up to a program to play for a coach, and you had no feeling that Bob Stoops, at least what I would gather from a recruit's point of view, that Bob Stoops would be leaving, and leaving immediately the way that it happened. Number two, I guess the closest parallel is the Urban Meyer one. Where an Urban Meyer back in 2009 retired from Florida. That was health reasons at the time, but not a lot of people bought the health reasons. And
that stuff subsided real
just
fast.
A couple of, you know, it did take long for those health reasons to go away and him to be the coach of Ohio State. And not to say that I don't buy him just leaving to live his life, but like, if he doesn't coach another day in his life, I would be shocked. I don't know, he's 56 years old. I think he's going to land somewhere else at some point and just to live your life. I think his life had a lot to do with college football. Number three, and I saw this tweet, so I'm not going to take original credit for it, but the biggest loser of Bob Stoops retiring today, the people who write the preseason magazines for college football, because those all have gone to print already. And now it's one big thing in your magazine that's wrong. The coach of Oklahoma.
Just Googling some things, a story pops up from last July in the Oklahoman said early in Bob Stoops' tenure at Oklahoma, it seemed as if he was destined to leave. This is a story written by Ryan Aber again last summer. Said he was rumored to go to Ohio State. He was rumored he might go to Florida to take over when Steve Spurrier left. Also was mentioned for the Browns, Notre Dame, Dallas Cowboys. And it said that he passed Bud Wilkinson as the second longest tenured coach in Oklahoma history. And the story goes on to say how he was going to stay at Oklahoma. Mm. So, shocker.
Yeah. And now the guy who's filling in is, what's his name again?
Lincoln Riley.
Lincoln Riley.
Yep.
And he's been there for
2 years.
2 years.
The offensive coordinator hired away from East Carolina.
And I don't believe he's that old either.
33. Yep.
33 years old at the coach of Oklahoma. I mean, talk about a come up of all come ups.
Last five coaches at Oklahoma were all in their 30s when they were hired.
So
Howard Schnellenberger was not one of the last five?
No, I don't believe so. Bud Wilkinson was 31. Chuck Fairbanks.
No, those are just the greatest. Oh, yeah. Those are the greatest. Howard Schnellenberger was there at the backside of his career. May have done the worst job ever at a Power 5 spot.
They learned. There you go. When all your coaches are in your 30s and they do well, hire them in the 30s.
So is Bob Stoops, you think, going to coach again?
I would think you'd have to say yes, unless you know why he's retiring. If it's just
he said to live
he
his
wants life.
Life.
Well, he might find after 2 or 3 years out that his life isn't quite the same as it was when he was coaching. But maybe not. Maybe he's going to just ride off into the sunset and, I don't know, do whatever he wants to do.
College football thing isn't for everybody. Maybe he's like, maybe the NFL's more of what he wants. Like the life of the NFL, of an NFL coach where you don't have the grind of recruiting and everything that
retire?
Goes along those lines.
Why would you just not say I'm leaving?
Because you're tired of recruiting and doing everything that goes along with it.
I'm going to the NFL.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Like some of the NFL openings, at least, you know, start rumbling. You start to hear it while the college football season is going on. So maybe the fact that you're not even coaching this year helps him be in a better position to take an NFL job if it were to open.
But, you know, I almost think that the way the college season ends, these guys, unless you're in the college football playoff, nobody cares if somebody leaves early. How many times does somebody else coach the bowl game?
It happens quite a bit. I just think, yeah, Oklahoma, you win the Big 12 every single year. There's a chance you're going to be in the college football playoff, though.
Right, and it would
and
be
if you're
t-
in the college
it
football
would be tough
playoff,
to step
you're
off.
Stepping away then right before you're about to be in that. I mean, that's not going to be smooth, no matter how you do it. Now, I don't think it's smooth that a 33-year-old is going to be coaching Oklahoma. Out of all the things that can go wrong in college football, like we've seen big-time programs, big-time coaches fall victim to a lot of different things involving scandal. I mean, 33 is quite a somebody that young to have this kind of responsibility when – does he have any head coaching experience in college football?
He was the assistant head coach at Eastern Carolina for 1 year.
That's a really, really tough job.
But it sounds like Stoops – and I believe the AD, their name is Castiglione. If you're there and that's where you're going, you have to be 100% that this is the guy. Because you're right, it's a risk. If nothing else, you could have gone kind of safe and said, we're going to make him the interim coach.
Yeah.
But now you also don't have to dodge those questions during the year. The recruits don't have to say, well, you're just an interim. How do we know that, you know, Barry Switzer's not coming back to coach? Kind of a thing.
He better win, though, fast and win at the highest level, because at Oklahoma you can't do it any other way besides just winning the Big 12 every year and being in the college football playoff. Because, dude, like, if it's 2 years of not winning the Big 12 in his first 2 years, you think this guy's going to have any kind of a leash? Because I don't.
No.
September 9th, they're at the Big House. Excuse me, at the Horseshoe. Ohio State. Ohio State beat them last year.
And if he wins, he gets an instant contract. Because Bob Stoops couldn't beat him in Oklahoma last year. Plus, my favorite part of this whole story, Lincoln Riley went to Texas Tech.
So, I guess they're not exactly like
no, they're still, if he loses his first game to Texas Tech,
that'll be October 28th.
He'd go 11-1, and if he loses that game, he might be out.
I mean, their non-conference games, in addition to Ohio State, are El Paso and Tulane, both at home. I think maybe the three of us could coach Oklahoma to wins in those games. And then the rest of them are conference games. They open at Baylor, then they go to, at Baylor, then they have a bye week, and then the rest of the schedule comes. They've got a championship game now in the Big 12. I don't know. Shocking news. I'm absolutely surprised at this one.
Now we bring up another angle with this. And it might be, the last act, the last memory of Stoops at Oklahoma, the Joe Mixon situation, and whether that plays a part in whether he just got tired of dealing with this mess of college football. Remember, you know, Joe Mixon, the video, and from what I believe, it was a suspension for a season for Mixon, but that suspension they used as a redshirt for him, which got some kind – that got a lot of heat. That got a lot of criticism for the move. Well, if you were suspending him for a year to save his season of eligibility, doesn't seem like the right play.
I
want to
say he also said if they knew what they knew now, what they knew back then, they would have suspended him and kicked him off the team.
Yeah, like that's the problem. I can go back and try to find all the quotes, and I guess the narrative is he didn't, in a way, mismanage that situation. I didn't have the biggest problem with like a year suspension and then given the redshirt for it. He still didn't play a year, and for a guy like Mixon, it still mattered because like, he was an NFL prospect anyway. So for him not to play for a year, it's not like he was going to be there every single year he was going to be at Oklahoma. So you know, he had NFL aspirations as it was. So I didn't think, you know, the season of eligibility, saving that was really going to matter in the long run, and it turned out not to matter.
Well, again, Bruce Feldman tweeting that Lincoln Riley, not an interim head coach. He is going to be the guy that Bob Stoops wants to go on and live his life. Mark Mangino, who's a former assistant and also a head coach at Kansas, tweeted that Bob always told him that when the time was right, he'd go out on his own terms. Well, this is certainly Bob Stoops' terms, at least for the moment, because nobody could have foreseen this coming.
Now, Barry Trammell did tweet out they had a team meeting scheduled for 2:30. Obviously, that didn't. The news didn't last till then. The meeting got bumped up 45 minutes. And I think my favorite stat I've seen from the Bob Stoops era, he had 10 Big 12 championships in his career, 9 home losses.
That's in 18 years.
I'd just be mad if I was a player, though. And I'm sure some of them, and maybe we can look through the roster, but like some of them probably came back another year instead of going
Baker
into the
Mayfield.
Draft to play for Bob Stoops. Like, you know, Baker Mayfield, for example, is, I don't know if many people think of him as a highly touted, you know, draft prospect quarterback anyway, but he certainly would like his team to be in the best position to compete for a championship. And you can't make the case to me that removing Bob Stoops, as much as you want to label him as an underachiever, and you know, you can certainly make the case if you wanted to, having a first-year guy who's 33 years old in his place doesn't make me more confident in Oklahoma.
You're listening to almost 100 years of Idaho sports broadcasting experience. It'll be interesting to get Caves and Prater's take today on Bob Stoops stepping down. Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris, Caves, Prater, and JP. It's 32 years old with almost 100 years of experience. Listen weekdays 1 to 6 on Sports Radio The Ticket. Coming up next, we've got quick hits. What tweet from a friend of the station made Twitter go nuts? And what major league record was tied last night by, in my opinion, the worst person ever to do it? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Time now for quick hits, where Chris and I tackle four topics in rapid-fire fashion. Let's go.
Topic number one.
All right, Chris, who plans to shoot more threes next season?
I hope you're not drinking any water because you might spit it out when you
hear
the name.
I'll leave the water way over here. That way I don't get anything on the computer or the microphones.
Dwight Howard.
Wait a second. I'm going to say Dwight Howard saying he wants to shoot threes is more shocking than Bob Stoops retiring.
Right? It's pretty shocking. After all, he's about a 55% free throw shooter, and that's, you know, from the free throw line.
Are we sure we're talking about the same Dwight Howard?
Yeah, it's this one who was a center for the Magic, then the Lakers, and the Rockets, and then the Hawks. This is Dwight Howard. But I guess it shouldn't be a surprise, because to prolong your career these days, you do have to be able to stretch the defense, and that's being able to make threes at a competent level.
Whoa. You said he wanted to shoot threes. Yeah. He didn't say anything about making them.
That's true. I guess if you want to shoot them, you got to make them. But hey, it's Dwight Howard, so I don't know what exactly is running through his mind at all times. But I understand why he would want to, but shouldn't he just like work on free throws? But again, like I believe he works on free throws, and he just doesn't have the ability to make them. But if he doesn't have the ability to make free throws, what gives me any level of confidence that he can step back a few feet farther and be able to drill those at a respectable rate that will stretch the defense? So work on him, if you will, at your own risk, but I don't have any confidence that Dwight Howard will ever become a 35% three-point shooter.
Wow, we're getting some stories I just don't believe.
All right, was that the beat? There we go.
Topic number two.
Number two. What story hasn't gotten a lot of play out here that is fascinating to you?
Well, it's the Ole Miss football recruiting not recruiting, Ole Miss football NCAA violations. They had the NCAA's memorandum to them. Now they're responding. Their 125-page response basically throws anybody that doesn't work for them under the bus. They have had 10 staffers that are mentioned. Head coach Hugh Freeze is mentioned in 10 of the 21 personally, the allegations. But they're keeping him. A lot of other people have lost their job. But the funniest one was there is a case that involves a recruit that their boosters allegedly gave $10,000 to, that they tried to say that Mississippi State, where he signed, gave him the $10,000 to. And when they are making their case back to the NCAA, they used a subtweet from the said recruit as evidence in their case. The recruit put up a picture of Heath Ledger as the Joker, actually a GIF clapping, as like he's trolling Ole Miss.
Yeah, this is SEC pettiness at its finest, right? This is just the SEC schools trying to blame each other for there's some money out there, somebody legally got some money, so we got to be petty and saying who gave him the money, who didn't, and it turns into a circus. So, yeah, I don't... In terms of SEC level, I'd give this like an 8. I feel like this is very SEC.
And it's all basically spawning, or a lot of it is spawning, from the Laramie Tunsil incident on draft night. I had been told by friends in the SEC, watch Ole Miss. They have been nefarious for several years. That team that played Boise State was one of the top recruited, rated teams in the country on the recruiting classes. And a lot of people think that money got them there.
So you want that win back? You want Boise State to get
I never
W
believe
back?
In forfeit wins back. Never.
Unless they, number three.
Unless they want to refund the tickets, we saw the game.
Fish is frustrated. He can't tie these. Oh, boy. Too bad, Fish. We'll get it. We'll get as we move on.
Sorry about that. All right. What friend of the station had a searing hot take that made Twitter go nuts?
Andy Benoit of Sports Illustrated. He is somebody who evaluates NFL talent, and he had a tweet today that definitely got the people going. He said that there are 15 backups that are better than Colin Kaepernick. 15 backups that are better, including names like Jimmy Garoppolo, Matt Moore, Colt McCoy, A.J. McCarron, Chad Henne, Geno Smith, Drew Stanton, Brock Osweiler, Cody Kessler, Chase Daniel. These guys are better than Colin Kaepernick. Derek Anderson, Matt Barkley, Landry Jones, Matt Castle.
All those two?
Yeah, those guys. A fan when he comes on the station, I can't say that this is anywhere near an opinion that probably should be out there. It just doesn't seem like there's any basis for it. Now, he just wrote an article. It was published like 7 minutes ago, so maybe I'll read it because, he got the people going. But I don't think there's 25 starters that are better than Colin Kaepernick, maybe 28. There's definitely not 15 backups that are better than Colin Kaepernick. Come on.
You gave me that list? No. I might take a few of them, but I'm not taking that many. No.
Topic number four.
Hey, we timed it correctly. Good job, Fish. We did it. But Major League record was tied by one of the most unlikely sources.
Scooter Gennett. You may ask, who is that? It's a utility player for the Cincinnati Reds, tying the record for most home runs in a Major League game with 4. He went 5-for-5 and had 10 RBI. Prior to last night, he had just 3 home runs and 117 plate appearances. He becomes the 17th player with 4 home runs in a game. 5 of them are Hall of Famers. The last time it was done was Josh Hamilton. Sean Green had a better night at the plate as far as hits go. He was 6-for-6. But other than that, Gennett is 5-for-5. Of the 13 players, he's only one of 13 players since 1913 to have 10 or more RBIs in the game. So it is a night to remember for Scooter Gennett. Now, I contend he's the worst player ever to have 4 home runs in a game because he would need 44 more home runs in his career to avoid being the lowest in the modern era of baseball. That would be doubling his home run total. I don't know that he'll get that many more at-bats. I don't know. Maybe he's a late bloomer. But Scooter Gennett in the record books tied with the likes of Willie Mays, Gil Hodges, and most recently Josh Hamilton, 4 home runs in a game.
Yeah, I saw Jeff Passan tweet out that this is possibly the best offensive game ever, which made me think about, like, man, we're calling a lot of things the greatest ever lately, which was what we were going to talk about earlier on in the show before Bob Stoops kind of surprised us all with retiring. But, yeah, he's going to join the list of a lot of the current greatest situation.
Well, I think maybe it is the greatest game ever in the sense if you weigh it on based on whether you think it would happen or not. If I told you Willie Mays would have four home runs in a game, he had 660 in his career, you'd think that Mays might be able to have four home runs in a game. But Scooter Gennett, a utility player, played with Milwaukee before coming to Cincinnati. To me, this is unbelievable. This is more shocking to me that he got the four home runs than Bob Stoops stepping down.
All right, but then where does the Dwight Howard free throw come into play here?
Because a lot of three-point shooting.
Three-point shooting. My bad.
I think I would go Dwight Howard first.
Okay, that's still the most
Scooter Gennett second. And because here's the thing, you've coached 18 years at Oklahoma. You could be tired. You could want to do something else. Everything could be face value on the Bob Stoops. The other two, way more unbelievable.
All right, so we are saying Scooter Gennett, greatest offensive game of all time. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. LeBron James is the greatest basketball player of all time. The Warriors this year, the greatest team of all time. Clayton Kershaw, the best pitcher of all time. Like, there's a lot of things that we're debating on whether they're the greatest of all time going on right now. Bill Belichick, the greatest coach of all time. Patriots dynasty, the greatest dynasty of all time. Floyd Mayweather, greatest boxer of all time. Like, these are all current active athletes that we've had debates on, or, you know, coaches or individual games. So are we just prisoners of the moment, or is it just what a time to be alive?
I think I will go with the former, prisoners of the moment. I think a lot of people that don't know somebody or what happened in the past find it hard to believe that somebody would be better than what's out there today. I mean, I'm 54 years old, and you give me the list of the people that they count are the best now, I'd probably dismiss half of them and say that I wouldn't think so.
But. Well, we do have the best, like, 2017 is the best transportation of all time, right? 2017 is the best medicine of all time, right?
Supposedly.
So, like, if, you know, we're supposed to get better, faster, stronger in all these different areas, like, why not sports? So maybe we're right.
And probably
we're
a lot of it. Probably a lot of it is true. Now, you talk about Mike Trout. I don't think Mike Trout is there yet.
He has the best start ever,
statistically. Whether he can get to what Willie Mays did or Barry Bonds did or what anybody did, who knows. Clayton Kershaw, the numbers he's putting up, very possibly the best ever. I think LeBron is probably in the discussion with two, maybe three players tops as far as best player ever. Mayweather, I would think not. I'm sorry, but I couldn't put him ahead of Ali as a boxer. Tiger, probably, as far as that run that he had. But again, everybody has their favorites.
Tiger was stopped, like, awful fast. Like, I feel like this was a conversation of, for Tiger Woods, well, his projection was going to make him, and then all of a sudden the projection stopped because he stopped being healthy.
When we come back, Phil Beckner will join us. He was promoted to associate head coach by Leon Rice, called him a rising star in the coaching profession. We'll hear that next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Phil Beckner joined Boise State basketball last year after being an assistant coach at Nebraska. He'd also worked at some other colleges and in the D-League. Yesterday, he was promoted by Coach Leon Rice to associate head coach. Phil Beckner joins us now on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Congratulations, Coach, on the promotion. What are your thoughts on that, and will your role change at all on the bench?
You know, I'm really, really grateful for the opportunity. Coach Rice has put an unbelievable, you know, belief in me and, you know, development for my career. And so I can't thank him enough. And I think anytime, you know, you get an accolade or a promotion like that, whether it's a coach on staff or a player like Chandler Hutchison being an all Mountain West guy, you got to, you know, attribute that to the success of the program. If the program doesn't win, if the program doesn't have high character kids or great people or any type of success, you know, those things don't happen. As far as responsibilities go, I don't think much will change. Maybe a little bit more with leadership of, you know, kind of mentoring some of the younger guys on staff, helping them more, just trying to be a little bit, you know, better leader. And, you know, Coach Rice trying to develop me and help me that way. That would probably be the biggest change in responsibility.
Now, in that release, Leon Rice had a quote saying, Phil is a rising star in the coaching profession. What about your personality or your accomplishments made him say that about you?
I don't know. I think Coach Rice was, you know, trying to be really, really kind, obviously. You know, the coaching profession has changed, you know, so much over the years. I'm still a younger guy, but, you know, now with social media, guys chasing jobs all the time, so many coaches have agents. I'm a little bit different. I just, you know, I try to keep my head down and work hard. I'm not a big self-promoting type guy. Just show up every day and, you know, try to, you know, make our program as good as it could be. If I could help Leon Rice get our program better, well, then, you know, we'll all prosper because of it.
We're talking Boise State basketball with Phil Beckner, just promoted to associate head coach yesterday. Phil, player development is something that I hear when people talk about you, something that is really a strong suit for you. We saw what Chandler did. How do people improve? Because I got to believe it takes place in a lot of places that aren't actually in the practice room.
Bob, you're exactly right, and that's a great question. A lot of when I speak at other coaching clinics, when people pose that question, the number one thing I say, if you want to make a player better, you got to make them a better person first. And, you know, whether it's film, one-on-one, grabbing lunch with them, talking to them just about changing some of those kind of lifestyle habits. Maybe it's going to bed earlier. Maybe it's communicating. Maybe it's responding to adversity better. I think if you can make them better people, then you're definitely going to make them a better player. And at the end of the day, there's, you know, player development, some people, they think it's all shooting. They think it's all dribbling. Like you said, there's so many different areas that we try to affect these guys. Adam Herman, our strength coach, does a tremendous job in the weight room. And as much as Chandler gets credit for all his skill work, like he's changed his body in there. So stuff with diet, like I said, stuff with film, stuff with, you know, communicating better with teammates, being a better leader, like all those go into player development. And that's something we really, really pride ourselves on in this program. We don't want to just say we're a recruiting program where we're just, now we want talented players and we're going to recruit the best players we could get. But we're going to, once we get them here, we really want to develop guys. So we want to have a developmental program more than just a recruiting program.
Now, speaking of Chandler Hutchison, what was your reaction when he announced he was coming back to Boise State, and what did he gain from the pre-draft process?
I was obviously super excited when Chandler said he was coming back. He and I are, you know, really, really close, so he and I talked every day throughout the process, kind of knew where his head was, knew the direction that he was heading and kind of some of the feedback he was getting from the different NBA executives. But that process was tremendous for him. It built a lot of confidence. It showed him that he could play with the highest guys at the highest level. You know, some of the college guys he worked out with some of those NBA workouts. And then the other thing it shows is just that, you know, the changes he's made, the sacrifices he's made, it's paid off. You know, he's one step away from being an NBA player. Does that mean he'll get it done? You know, I'm not sure. It's going to be up to Chandler and Chandler only. He's going to have, you know, his best summer ever. He's going to have to work really, really hard still and improve a lot of things because, you know, when you're trying to get to the NBA level, you're playing against the best of the best. And it's not just, you know, every once a week, twice a week, you're playing against the best of the best every single day. Practice, workouts, reps, and he's going to have to get himself ready for that, which he can, and I really think he will.
Phil, last year, James Webb III decided to go into the NBA draft, ended up playing on the Sixers D-League team for the entire season and did quite well. You've coached in both leagues. What's the difference for a player developing in the D-League versus taking a senior year in college?
That's another great question, Bob. You know, I think the difference between the D-League and the NBA or the D-League in college is you're either a pro or you're a prospect. And whether it's James Webb or anyone else who's just a complete D-League guy playing there, they're still a prospect. To be a pro, there's just so many different little things you have to do. Little is maybe being on time, knowing the scouting report more, knowing like the range you could shoot the ball to, or maybe you're developed to shoot that range to. So it could be a vast majority of things. But truly, when you're in the D-League or when you're in college and you're still trying to get to that next step, you're still just a prospect. Those guys, they don't have, if there's a list of 10 qualities, they only have 5 out of the 10. They only have 6 out of the 10. When you're a pro, you have 10 out of those 10 qualities. And those are, you know, on the court, off the court, character, talent, ability, you know, various things like that. And like I said, that's a great question because guys like James Webb, Chandler Hutchison, other players, once they truly become a pro and, you know, kind of check all those boxes, then the sky's the limit for them.
But is there a difference between the two? I'm sure there is, that maybe makes one better for one and one better for the other to stay.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, every situation, just like recruiting for us in college basketball, every recruit is going to have his own story. Every recruiting situation is going to be unique. Some guys, you know, they get to the D-League and they haven't been coached as well. They haven't maybe worked as hard, and their development, they're just going to increase a ton. There's some guys that stay in college and they need that maturity still. They need that development still more from the college level. So, I mean, that's a little bit harder to answer because I truly think like every situation is so unique. But what most people don't realize, whether it's kind of the normal fan or even like the guys on our team, they don't realize how good those D-League guys are. because they truly are one step away from the NBA. Those D-League guys are really, really good players. Like when I coached, we had a guy on our team who was a starter for like Villanova when they made the Elite Eight. We had another starter for Kansas when they were in the Sweet 16 or at least something, like, I can't remember. But those guys were starters at high major, maybe blue blood schools, and then they're playing in the D-League, you know, every day. So there's really, really good players at that level.
Boise State Associate Head Coach Phil Beckner joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk, Sports Radio The Ticket. Now, earlier this offseason, Paris Austin announced that he was leaving Boise State, settled on Cal as a transfer. What was your thoughts on that whole ordeal, and how does a program handle departures like that?
Well, we don't talk about players who aren't part of our program. So players at other institutions and that go other places, we don't talk about guys, you know, on other teams or anything like that. But the direction of our program is tremendous here right now. We got a bunch of young guys who are hungry and willing to work. They're super excited to be here. You know, we almost have to take our foot off the pedal right now. We have guys like Justinian Jessup and Alec Hobb and Marcus Dickinson who are all ready to make a tremendous jump for us. A guy like Zach Caney, who's put, you know, a lot of work into this program for 3 years and who's been a great teammate. All the guys love him. Like, he's ready for a tremendous jump. And then you factor in, you know, like Chandler Hutchison and one of the new guys we signed, Christian Singfelder, who will be a senior. Like, their leadership's unbelievable. So we have a group every day right now where we walk in the gym. We're excited to see them, and they're excited to see us. And to be honest, they're just begging for more and more and more. And we got to tell them, guys, this is the first week of June. We don't start practice till October, but they're ready to go. And when you have a group like that, and when you have a coaching staff like ours, and when everyone's connected and bought in, and everyone really, really wants to be here, you know, I think success is inevitable. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of excitement walking in the gym. There's a lot of excitement in the office with our guys and with our staff. And, you know, moving forward with these guys, you know, they really, really want to be here. They're really, really bought in. And like I said, they're working their tails off right now.
Phil, what can you do with them in the summer as the summer school session is starting? And how much can we expect guys to improve from 1 year to the next?
You know, we have certain restrictions with NCAA. So we could divide our workouts however we want. We could work out 2, 3, 4 times a week, but there's a certain time limit on that and certain time restrictions. There's also a certain amount of days they could be in the weight room and doing conditioning and extra stuff with our strength coach. So we kind of have a balanced schedule, balanced calendar for June and July. Obviously, a little bit right now will be slower paced. Then as July hits, when they're in a little bit better shape, we'll pick it up a little bit. They'll start doing, you know, maybe a little bit more. As far as improvement goes and how much you could see someone improve, I mean, that's entirely up to them. You know, how hard are they going to work? You have some guys. And Bob, you've been around college basketball a long time. You got some guys who want to be in the gym before and after practice or before and after a required workout. When guys are shooting and doing that stuff, you know, like I said earlier, the sky's the limit. You look at a guy, which is our, you know, poster child right now for development improvement, guy like Chandler Hutchison, look at the jump he made from, you know, the time last summer to Costa Rica to ending up being an all Mountain West player and a potential MVP candidate, you know, last year and, you know, this next season. I think it's individual based, but guys could really get better. Hard work pays off, and, you know, that's been proven in about every profession in the world.
Boise State Basketball Associate Head Coach Phil Beckner joining us on Idaho Sports Talk. And you said earlier on in this conversation that maybe you're not the biggest on social media as some of the other coaches out there, but I do follow you, and you do tweet quite frequently, a lot of quotes and things along those lines. What is your objective on social media?
You know what? I just, most of the time it's just quotes or coming from things I read. I just, you know, want to share things that hopefully I know a lot of other coaches in our profession. We all follow each other. We all share ideas. A lot of players, you know, follow me or other coaches, especially with some of the development stuff when, you know, I might have different NBA guys in the gym or some of our players in the gym. So most of all, it's just to share information, just to try to make the game better, help, you know, make kids better. You know, obviously the main one in college basketball and why I truly use it is, you know, for recruiting. So they could see the great things that are happening with our program, great things that are happening with our players, and obviously just some basketball knowledge or quotes or things about success that might be a little bit motivational, because you'd be shocked how many coaches you meet or clinics you speak at. They're like, oh, yeah, I follow you on Twitter. You sent a great article one time, or a quote maybe hit a player, and then 2 years later you're recruiting that player and he already knows you walking into the gym. So really just to share information, try to make others better, and try to make the game better.
Like on that note, I believe it was last summer when Damian Lillard arrived on campus to work out during the offseason. Joel Ballenboy just recently tweeted out a photo of him. What is the benefit of having guys, NBA guys, on the Boise State campus?
Yeah, well, first of all, they're coming out here to get better. You know, they're coming to work, and they're not coming out here for vacation. They're coming because we know how to develop players. We know how to improve their skill set. We know how to improve them as people, and that's why they want to come out here. And obviously, Boise is a great place to live. Our program's had a lot of success. We got great facilities here. So whether it's Damian Lillard or Joe Bolenboy, you know, some of these NBA guys coming out, they're coming here to get better and improve themselves and improve their game. And then the benefit, obviously, I think the biggest one is for our guys to see them. They're working out in the same gym. Sometimes they'll all play pickup together. Our guys get to interact with them. Our guys get to see how hard they work. Our guys get to pick their brain and, you know, figure out, hey, man, what does it take to get to that level? What is something, you know, you would have done different? You know, like you mentioned, Joe Bolenboy, who's in town already, played for the Utah Jazz, was a second-round pick. He spoke to our team, and, you know, he gave them some great stuff. He's like, man, I wish I would have done this different in college. Or, man, this year in the NBA, this was so hard. Like, it was, I almost couldn't believe I did it. And telling the guy some of the things he had to do to make it, it's a huge benefit for our players, and they love it. They soak it up. They develop relationships. And because we got high-character guys on our team and high-character guys come out here, that's a really, really good combination.
Phil, thanks so much for your time. Congratulations on the promotion.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
That's Phil Beckner, just promoted to associate head coach by Leon Rice. The game changer in extreme competitive kayaking is coming June 15th to the 17th of the North Fork of the Payette River. See extreme kayak racing at this annual world-class event showcasing the best big water paddlers, brought to you by Toyota, one of the top sponsors of the North Fork. Start with the awards ceremony at the Egyptian Theater. That'll take place in downtown Boise Thursday night, June the 15th. Details available at ktik.com. Some questions on whether English should be the only language in baseball. A couple former players seem to think so. We'll talk about that next on Sports Radio The Ticket. We are back on Idaho Sports Talk. Bob and Chris here from 1 to 3 on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM. The Ticket, Caves and Prater, will take over today at 3 and bring you home until 6. Biggest story of the day, Bob Stoops deciding to retire as a college football coach at 56 years old. And promoting a 33-year-old assistant, Lincoln Riley. Sounds like it is a done deal, and he is taking over, no interim tag.
Yeah, he's just bringing on the 33-year-old understudy, if you will, because the release basically said they were working to put him in this position. I think Bob Stoops, within the last half hour, did release a statement basically saying this isn't health-related. This is just the timing that I want. I want to step away right now. And he quoted a Bible verse, and away he goes off into the sunset, saying he's still going to live in Norman and he's available for help if anybody needs it. But yeah, he's done with coaching at Oklahoma. Not what I expected to talk about going into today, for sure. I don't think it's great for, you know, the people who just decided to climb aboard the program. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, there were no whispers of something like this. So I don't think the people who were brought aboard to Oklahoma were thinking that Bob Stoops was going to leave within the next couple of months, but it just so happened to be the case. And now Baker Mayfield, somebody who was there and established, and somebody who I'm sure was like, all right, instead of going into the NFL draft, where I may or may not be a highly touted guy, I'll come back here to try to win us a championship, but my coach can't even come back to help us win a championship. So I would see why there'd be an element of frustration that would go along with it. But if this really makes him happy, then so be it. I don't think he's done coaching, though. That's just the skeptic in me. He's 56 years old.
Well, when Meyer dropped out at Florida, where did he sit out? A year?
Yeah, maybe a couple of years. And then all of a sudden, he's, you know, Ohio State back in the national championship game. All I know is this Lincoln guy, he better win, and better win soon, because Bob Stoops, for all the underachievements that you want to point out, and of course the loss to Boise State might be near the top of the list or somewhere around that, from the Oklahoma perspective at least, he kept winning the Big 12. So that's your standard, and it's not easy. And we probably consider it to be a layup, but it's not the layup to win the conference as frequently as Oklahoma kept winning the Big 12.
It's funny, the Big 12 in football and basketball, I mean, the Oklahoma dominance in football, not even close to the Kansas dominance in basketball, but probably the one conference that both sides have had a dominant team in the league that's been longstanding.
Correct. So, good luck there. I'm not necessarily thinking better times are ahead for Oklahoma, but they could prove me wrong.
They could. Baseball. Some broadcasters making comments about English being the language of baseball. We talked about Mike Schmidt yesterday saying that Odubel Herrera, the center fielder for the Phillies, couldn't lead the team because he didn't speak enough English. And then Jerry Remy last night on Red Sox broadcast blasting the fact that a translator was out on the mound. Maybe he was disappointed. I heard the clip. I think he thought he was the trainer at first and started going into the fact that maybe there was something wrong with Tanaka, and then he realized it was the translator, not a trainer.
Well, describe the clip, because I'm sure not a lot of people are familiar with
the story. Well, Tanaka is a pitcher from Japan, and when they went to the mound, Tanaka was getting hit around by the Red Sox, and Jerry Remy basically said that, you know, he doesn't think translators should be out on the mound, that pitchers or players should know enough of the English language to be able to converse with the other teammates and coaches on the team. Now, maybe everybody's talking about things to speed things up. Maybe he thinks it's something that slows it down, but it more or less came out to me that he was just thinking that if you're coming over here to play, you needed to learn English.
So what's your opinion on this?
I think you need to have the players feel as comfortable as possible. I don't think it would take that much longer for somebody to say something quickly to somebody. Checking with the rules, I thought that maybe the Spanish-speaking players were put at a disadvantage because a lot of times they haven't afforded them translators. I know you and I both have worked minor leagues. There isn't somebody for people who are fresh into this country from one of the Latin countries. And I was thinking that maybe they didn't afford it, but I checked the Major League rules out, and it's just that usually there's somebody else on the field that speaks Spanish as well as English, so there isn't the need for a translator per se. Mm. This year, Major League Baseball added a translator for press conferences because they thought that a lot of the Spanish-speaking players were not participating in interviews enough because they didn't feel comfortable enough to do the interviews in Spanish. So there is the league has given money to each team to pay a Spanish language translator to work in the media relations department.
So what are your thoughts on the comments made by Jerry Remy about, you know, do you feel Spanish speaking players need to learn English to play baseball? Do they need to be able to speak it better?
I think it would help in any form of life if you're speaking the country, but I think if you have ways and means that you can help somebody understand what's going on and get the point across of what the coach is trying to make, I don't have a problem with them doing it, but I think most people, as they are in the country long enough, do pick up things. I know players, as the year goes along in minor league baseball, they get a lot better at speaking the language because they're immersed in it. So I think a lot of it just has sort of happened over the time. And, you know, Remy, you know, old school baseball guy, I think just felt that maybe he didn't want to see extra people standing on the mound. I mean, my guess.
I just think it's the height of, you know, kind of being in a privileged position there to, you know, you didn't get, you know, you're not somebody who is trying to earn a living in an area where nobody speaks the language that you usually speak. It's really tough to learn a different language.
Sure.
I don't know if I could ever learn a different language. Place me in Germany, place me in Italy, place me in Greece. I don't know if I could be able to adapt to a language. How long would it take me? A year, 2 years, 4 years, 6 years? To the point where I'd feel comfortable and being able to communicate how to throw a certain pitch or how to attack a hitter? Like, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes, and I am so bad at trying to pick up other languages. Again, I've worked in minor league baseball before. I'm trying to understand Spanish. Like, I try to get it, but, like, unless I'm, like, physically taking classes or something like that, then I'm not getting it. And, like, I feel like anything that could help me, whether it's a translator if I was in a different country trying to earn a living or something along those lines, if it's available for me to help, why would I be against something to make somebody else feel a little bit more comfortable?
So why do you think guys are taking pot shots at that at this time?
Well, I mean, have you read the news lately? I mean, this is the kind of era that we're in 2017, this recent cycle that we've had, and what you are seeing on your favorite cable news network every day. I mean, this is kind of where we are in 2017. So for people to feel empowered to say things like this, I don't really find it surprising once you
Remy
watch
the Red Sox broadcast. I've watched him for a number of years, and the Red Sox broadcast is not usually afraid. He did apologize, but is not afraid to take interesting takes, shall we say. takes that maybe are a little far afield.
Interesting. Good word choice.
Get the best of Sports Radio The Ticket with the must-have ticket app at iTunes or KTIK.com. Access social media posts, live broadcast, featured interviews and conversations, as well as even entire shows. It's an Idaho sports lover's dream. You can download the Sports Radio The Ticket app today. Fish, we got an update coming up. What's in it?
Well, Boise State basketball has their opponent for the upcoming Mountain West versus Missouri Valley Conference Challenge. Plus, they might be called voluntary OTAs of the NFL, but that didn't stop one Buffalo Bill player from spending almost $1,000 just to make sure he made it there in time. That's coming up next in the Sports Update on Idaho Sports Talk. Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Big Judd's. Want to make your favorite Big Judd's burger a salad? Just ask him. Trying world-famous Big Judd's burger as a salad today. Big Judd's on Overland near Eagle Road and Protest Hill near Boise State. Speaking of Boise State, they have their upcoming opponent for the Mountain West versus Missouri Valley Conference Challenge. Broncos will host Loyola of Chicago on November 28th in Taco Bell Arena. In addition, we talked to Phil Bechner earlier today on the show. Leon Reince announced yesterday that Bechner has been promoted to associate head coach for the Broncos.
I think the Mountain West might need to reevaluate the challenge with the Missouri Valley. The last couple of seasons, last 5 years or so, they've lost their two most prominent members of the league in Creighton and then most recently Wichita State going from the Missouri Valley over to the American Athletic Conference. You know, I'm all for trying to get better games on the schedule because the idea was that you now get yourself a home game or an away game against somebody that also is looking for home games. So you give each other a home and home, if you will, during the length of this contract. But the sizzle factor of the schools that remain in the Missouri Valley, Chris, not what it once was.
Correct. So unless they give us a stake, there's really no advantage here because, you're right, like Loyola, Chicago, really? Bradley? Yeah, there's some of the, you know, UNLV gets, what, Northern Illinois? That's your top game? Like, if you're not getting Northern Illinois in this conference.
Northern Iowa.
Northern Iowa. I'm sorry. Northern Iowa, you and I. Thank you for the correction.
As opposed to NIU.
NIU. If you're not getting them, then who you want to get that's going to be like somewhere you're excited to play? Was it the one who was in the NIT last year?
Illinois State.
That was another one who was, you know, pretty good last season. But can you rely on them to be consistently good enough to where it really helps your strength of schedule and it's really bolstering you to an NCAA tournament berth? I don't think so. A lot of these games are going to hurt your RPI.
And the Creighton game a few years ago that led Boise State to the at-large bid to the NCAA tournament, that they won the game when Creighton was unbeaten, that was a huge win for the Broncos.
Yeah, but again, they're in the Big East now, so not the same thing. So these challenges are only cool when the conferences that are involved in the challenges are stable, where you know they're going to be good enough, like, you know, the power conferences. Now my follow-up with this, where does Loyola Chicago rank on your favorite Loyolas? Got Loyola Marymount.
Well, I did a game when we played them in Las Vegas a couple of years ago. I've never been to the campus Loyola Chicago. I've been to Loyola Marymount's campus, and I've been to the Loyola of Baltimore's campus.
Yeah, Loyola Maryland. There's one of New Orleans.
I've not been to that one. Loyola Marymount's campus was very nice. I'd give them the nod as far as the look.
It's just funny. Loyola is the top of the Marymount's the top of the power rankings. Now, what was it? 48-45. The final score of that game.
Boise State had a lot of injuries that day, if I recall.
Grimmick didn't play. Marks didn't play.
Right. And if that's the case, Grimmick and Marks not playing, that's a pretty bad start for your team.
And Boise State lost like 48-45. That's a terrible college basketball game. Like, you've caught a lot of games in your life. You can admit one was terrible.
It was not one of the
more
memorable.
That has to be a terrible game, right?
Well, the two best players on the given team aren't playing. That hurts. I mean, tonight, if we're going to call the NBA Finals and James and Irving don't play or Curry and Durant don't play, that hurts the game a lot.
Yes, and if they only score a combined 90-something points, like that's also going to hurt it. That's just boring.
If they only score 90 points, I'd be excited.
Well, if they only score 90 points, then Cleveland changed their tactics tonight.
They turned the shot clock
and turned
off.
The shot clock off, held the ball, and did everything that they probably should be doing. Because if there's 90 points scored between the two teams, I think Cleveland has a better chance to win.
Now we'll go to the NFL. Never really 90-point games in the NFL. However, they are doing OTAs. They're in full force, and And I like to throw around the word voluntary OTAs. It's not always the case. Sharice Wright, a cornerback for the Buffalo Bills, he found himself in Chicago last night. No way to make it to Buffalo. It's unclear whether or not he missed his flight. Flight got canceled, but he needed to get to Buffalo to make his voluntary OTA, so he did what any other person would do, and he hired an Uber driver for the 8-hour trip from Chicago to Buffalo. Trip cost Wright $632. He then tipped the driver $300 on top, so a $932 8-hour drive from Chicago to Buffalo. Perhaps a reason for the big tip: Uber is not yet legal in Buffalo, won't be until till June 29th. So the guy couldn't just start pick up his business in Buffalo. He had to drive all the way back to Chicago to start his business, which...
Well, no, couldn't he have done business along the way?
He could have, yeah. He couldn't just park there.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder, I'm somewhat familiar with Uber. When you give them the route, they know where you're going. How many drivers turned him down?
How many would have thought either that was a mistake or that somebody's pranking me or something? Although I guess they charge your card, wouldn't they?
I mean, they probably see the money that's attached to that one, and there's probably a couple of people who are like, yo.
But an 8-hour drive in the middle of the night?
But some people's Uber shifts are like 8 hours.
True.
So if you're going to have an 8-hour Uber shift, like, wouldn't you just rather have one to go to, you know, Buffalo?
I've got a question on the regulation of Uber, and I sort of question some of it anyway, but they don't allow bus drivers to drive so many hours when you're carrying people. I don't know about taxi drivers, if there's a limit. I'm surprised maybe they didn't have to have a second driver.
Switch cars in the middle of Chicago.
Switch drivers.
Hey, I'll take it for a couple. Yeah, I don't know exactly what the regulation. Maybe some of the Uber drivers out there can let us know. 208-424-9300 in terms of, like, yeah, do they limit the amount of hours in a row you're able to have on a shift? Because I wouldn't want a tired driver. Like, that'd be the worst thing.
Which, speaking of switching drivers, Wright's case not unique. Devon House, a Green Bay Packer, he was in Minnesota Monday, missed his flight to Green Bay where they had their OTA, so he reached out on Twitter saying, any Packers fans in Minnesota want to give me a ride? He ended up catching a ride with the Johnson brothers. Now, the brothers actually did pair up so that they could keep each other awake and switch drivers. Now, all House had to pay for his trip was $80 for gas, which the brothers forcefully took. They continued to refuse. And then he also gave them some signed gear, let them take pictures with the Lombardi Trophy at 3 a.m. in the morning inside Lambeau Field. House said he did do a quick background check because they had a mutual friend on Twitter before agreeing to the ride, though he did say, what's the difference between what I did and Uber?
Really, it doesn't seem like there's much of a difference. Now, my thing with him is, I wouldn't say too loudly that you are a Packers player in Minnesota. Like, there's a lot of Minnesota Vikings fans in Minnesota, and they don't like the Packers very much. So I wouldn't say that too loudly, because you could get some people rolling up on you and trying to do some damage.
But Packer fans, I'm sure, enjoyed this. Now, you know, if you want to go to a Viking-Packer game, I think you got a guy you can call. You got a hookup now.
You got the hookup? You should get, like, season tickets to, you know, Green Bay Packers games.
I don't even know if he has access to that.
I know.
The waiting list is long enough that
he might get cut, and then all of a sudden your contact is gone.
I hear Aaron Rodgers has plenty of leftover tickets, though.
Now, my question is,
his family doesn't usually go anymore?
They're not allowed.
Good point. My question with this now is, what is so hot at these OTAs that people are doing all these rides to get there? These are voluntary.
Allegedly.
You can't make it. What's so odd about these OTAs?
Allegedly
everybody
voluntary.
Everybody got to be rolled
up.
Yeah,
but let me ask you. Sharice Wright, what is the chances he makes the team? He probably needs the voluntary, so this could be a good investment for him. And the guy from Minnesota was Devon House. Is he a regular for them?
No, he's not. I believe he just came over from Jacksonville. So.
Okay, so, I mean, you got guys that probably need to be seen.
Speaking of... Chris, you asked a great question. What's going on at these OTAs? Well, Odell Beckham Jr. does not care. He has continued to stay away from Giants OTA. Now, according to Adam Schefter, that's because the Giant wide receiver plans to hold out in his desire for a new contract. Beckham did tell NFL Network last week he would be at the Giants' mandatory minicamp, which starts next Tuesday. Beckham currently scheduled to make $1.8 million this year and $8 million next year on his fifth-year option of his rookie deal, which the Giants picked up earlier this year.
It's the example of, y'all don't pay me enough to be showing up outside of work hours. That's kind of what Odell Beckham is saying with this. Like, dude, Nike's paying me like $5 million. You're only paying me $1.8 million, which means when it's not mandatory hours, I work for Nike.
He did post a video of himself sitting on the ground catching footballs one hand out of a jug machine, which I'm not sure correlates to anything you will ever do in the NFL.
Odell Beckham can catch anything at any angle. Like, I feel like this all translates. That catch he made, was it like now 3 years ago?
Yeah, against the Dallas
All
Cowboys.
That training was for that one catch that put him on the map for sure. I mean, maybe with all this free time he can get a haircut, though.
don't like his hair. I mean, I was thinking maybe him and his kicking net could go out and, you know, see the sights, maybe go back to the island. He won't be criticized.
What is their relationship status at this point?
I think it's complicated, I would assume, would be my guess.
It really does seem like it's always complicated with Odell.
Yeah, and last part of the sports update, friend of the show, LeVar Ball. He's had some restrictions put on him by the LA Lakers and their coach, Luke Walton. Walton said LeVar will not be allowed to attend Lonzo's workout for the team. However, Walton did say LeVar is a welcome guest at dinner, saying, quote, I think he definitely would make the dinner more entertaining. He's definitely welcome to join us for that one. So no workout, but he can join the Lakers, Walton, and anyone else in attendance for dinner.
Oh, I can't wait for this. They need to put somebody at this restaurant needs to have their phone out and record this for YouTube. Because I'd imagine they would go to some kind of a nice restaurant and he would be acting so ratchet. He'd be loud, he'd be obnoxious, acting like he has no home training. He'd be at the most fancy, high-end restaurant, and he's acting all the ratchet, man. Oh, we need to see this.
I would imagine that other parents would not be allowed in a random workout. My question is would an agent be allowed in a workout? If you were like a regular agent, would they let you in? I'm sure they would take the regular agent to dinner, maybe if the parents came along. So it sounds like Luke Walton and the Lakers going along with what the normal protocol would be.
All right, Bob, let me put you in a scenario here. You get that big Boise State paycheck, so you're feeling good about yourself. Mm-hmm. You and your wife, you guys want to celebrate this big old paycheck that you just got, so you pick the best and the fanciest and the most high-end restaurant that you get to go to. And what if two tables down from you, you got LeVar Ball and his crew at the all the loud? Like, what would that experience be like? You want your high-end dinner, and two tables down, it's LeVar Ball being the loudest and doing the most.
I would think that on that night, I might say that it was entertainment. I would think it would be entertainment.
LeVar Ball's in Boise, I'm going. I would be excited. And then won the sports update by saying Bob Stoops announces retirement effective immediately today. Offensive coordinator Lincoln Riley has been promoted to head coach, not the interim coach. He's supposed to be the long-term option in Oklahoma.
Wow. Big news today. Hard to believe, but it is true. The game changer in extreme competitive kayaking is coming June 15th to the 17th. It'll be to the North Fork of the Payette River. See extreme kayak racing at this annual world-class event showcasing the best big water paddlers, brought to you by Toyota, one of the top sponsors of the North Fork. Start with the awards ceremony at the Egyptian Theater in downtown Boise. That'll be Thursday the 15th. Details available at ktik.com. Quick picks coming up next. Chris and I shouldn't have doubted Max Scherzer. He struck out more than 10 Dodgers, giving us both a loss last night. Tonight's picks mainly centering on the NBA next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Talking about Bob Stoops stepping down as Oklahoma's coach, basically at the start of summer. Bob and Chris on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Quickly, Ralph wants to make a point on Bob Stoops. Ralph?
Well, Chris made a comment about he wasn't sure if it was a positive step for OU. It is.
Okay. Why?
Bob got a nickname called Big Game Bob.
Yeah.
Because he always choked in big games. if you go back and look at games that he was supposed to win, he didn't. He always seemed to have his team play down to the competition. I think Lincoln Riley is going to be a really good step for them. He's really a bright offensive mind. I went to Oklahoma State. I was kind of hoping Bob Stoops would stick around for a long time.
Okay, I see that. Now, thanks for the call, Ralph. Appreciate it. Uh-huh. The reviews have been pretty good for the young 33-year-old, but I will say, to lose a lot of big games, you have to play in a lot of big games, and to play in a lot of big games, you have to be pretty doggone good as a team. And Bob Stoops constantly had Oklahoma pretty good as a team, so... be careful what you wish for. To play in big games or to lose big games, you have to be in them. It'd be a lot better to lose big games than to not be in them at all.
It's time to consult the Magic 8 Ball. Open up a fortune cookie or maybe even flip a coin.
I step him into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some quick picks and predictions with Bob and Chris.
And quick picks and predictions, sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories, located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Rough night for both of you yesterday. You both went 1-2. Chris got the Red Sox right. You guys both missed on Scherzer and then the Indians. Rockies killed him. Bob, on the other hand, missed the Yankees. Meanwhile, he was on the Rockies boat. Bob now 6-3. Chris 3-6. You've got some ground to make up. But I feel like you guys may be different here on who's going to win Game 3 of the NBA Finals, since you both had different winners overall in the series. So we'll start with you, Bob. Who you got winning game three tonight, the Cavs or the Warriors?
I really wanted to pick Cleveland because I really think this series, or I thought this series, was going to go seven games. But I'm reading the tea leaves, and the tea leaves say that they're not going to try to slow it down and change the pace of the game. So because of that, I have to go with Golden State. I think if Cleveland continues this strategy, it's going to result in a 4-0 sweep for the Warriors. I would love to pick Cleveland. They won game three last year in Cleveland by a big margin. Again, strategy concerns. The only reason I'm going for Golden State tonight, I'm hoping, as far as the series go, that Tyronn Lue is just spreading misinformation and he's going to change his strategy, but he says he's not, so that's why I'm going against him.
Chris?
I'm hoping for misinformation. I just think that they have to they can't be watching the game and thinking that they can keep doing what they were doing before and think that it's going to work out much differently. I know you're going at home, and role players typically play better at home, but, you know, I'm going to pick Cleveland and hope that everything that they've said throughout the last couple of days has just been a lie.
Well, we'll stick to the NBA Finals, pick number two. Who will be the leading scorer for Game 3? Now, if you're reading the tea leaves, Durant has been the leading scorer in Games 1 and 2. But, Chris, who do you think is going to be the leading scorer tonight?
Cleveland's going to win, and Kyrie Irving is going to have his unstoppable game. Yes, Kyrie. Now, his shot hasn't been going in, and his layups haven't been as on the last couple of games. And there's whispers that he might be a little bit hurt. But if he's been battling an injury, there's been a couple of days in between games here. Returning back at home, and when he's on, it's not like he can get shut down by good defense. Klay's been excellent, but it's still a matter of Kyrie Irving can hit difficult shots with the best of them. So if he's on his game, I think he can rack up the points. So I'm saying 30-plus, probably closer to 33, 34 for Kyrie.
Well, I gave Kyrie a thought. I gave Curry a thought. I gave Durant a thought, but I went to the standby going to King James. I know James is going to have a lot of points. I'm not sure who's going to lead the Warriors in scoring. They might be better than James, especially if Golden State wins. But I think it's safe to say that James, for Cleveland to be in the game, is probably going to have to be around 30. And I think he's a safe guy to put on your top of the leaderboard.
And we'll go to baseball. The Astros saw their 11-game winning streak snap last night due to shoddy bullpen. However, Dallas Keuchel on the mound, going to be looking to become the first pitcher in baseball this season for his 10th win. So, Bob, will Dallas Keuchel get his 10th win of the season tonight against the Royals?
Going to be a tough matchup. Jason Vargas has pitched well for Kansas City. ERA right around 2.73. Mark coming off a shutout against Cleveland, but Keuchel's been nearly unhittable. 1.67 ERA, 9-0. I would have been more likely to go with Kansas City had Houston won their 12th in a row, but since the losing streak is now one, I don't see Houston losing two in a row. I'm going to go with the Astros and Keuchel to win tonight to go to 10-0 on the year.
Chris? Keuchel's the stopper. He ends the losing streaks, the long losing streak of one game. He's also missed a couple of starts with an injury this year and still could be the first in 10 wins. Like, that's pretty impressive.
He's the only one with nine.
So, I mean, like, dude, you're doing something right.
And if you missed any of the picks, check it out on KTIK Twitter.
Jeff Caves in studio. Jeff getting set to take over along with Mike Prater at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock. Jeff, what do you guys have going today?
Well, first, it's the college experience. The Coolidge is in studio, the former NFL football player. And we'll talk about virtual reality with him, a teammate of his that played for a year in Green Bay. Evan Moore is with a company that has a virtual reality system. We'll do that during the college football hour and talk about Boise State's involvement in that. They have dipped their toes in it. 3:15, though, first, Troy Merritt will come up here in just about 25 minutes. He's made the U.S. Open, what his expectations are and how he got there. And we are making arrangements to get you Bob Stoops' presser at 4:30, the retiring Oklahoma coach who, you know, I don't know about you guys, I haven't heard anything to the contrary, so I'm just to assume he just pulled the plug and said, I'm tired of dealing with 16-year-olds and 15-year-olds and two recruiting seasons now and tweets and social media, and I don't need the aggravation.
How much did this catch you off guard today? If I said somebody was going to retire, would you have even gone to him as one of the first few to pick?
I don't listen to him enough. I don't follow his press conferences. I don't follow him around, so he looks like a diehard football coach to me because he has a square jaw and he yells and he looks angry on the sideline. He doesn't look like he's interested in Twitter. He doesn't look like he's interested in anything but getting people off his lawn if it doesn't make him win. and just cutting guys loose, recruiting guys that can play and letting everything else figure it out. So maybe Joe Mixon, exhausted him some. That could be. And just you get so much money, not enough time. Something's got to give.
I want to rule out NFL. Like, you can get tired of these 16, 15 dealing with those guys. But, NFL, different hours, fewer hours, less of a grind. And he has accomplishments where he could get looked at. You can never really get those looks when you're constantly in the Big 12 championship game and probably in the playoff, the college football playoff. So I think I wouldn't rule out maybe he gets some NFL rumors next coaching carousel.
He owns two homes in Chicago now. I don't know what life's like when I have $15, $20 million in the bank. I don't understand that experience. Willing to find out, but we'll ask Darren College. He may have an understanding about it, so we'll do all that.
Sounds great. Looking forward to Jeff and Mike and Darren College today starting at 3. I wish I could make that. Bob Stoops has me by 2 years, Chris. I wish I had that kind of money in the bank to decide if I want to just hang out and enjoy life.
If you want to hold out and let this hold out drag in the football season and you need an announcer for a couple of games, you know where to find me. Although, would I cross the picket line? Like, that wouldn't be good to exactly cross the picket line if you drew the line down. Hard line. Yeah. I need to be paid more. And then I step in. That's not a good look for me. Looks like Chris Acker, according to the Idaho Statesman, was named the new Boise State assistant basketball coach.
So we've had a lot of basketball news this week.
Yeah.
Bill Beckner gets promoted, assistant coming from Hawaii to take over the spot. John Riley vacated. Try to get him later in the week as well. Tomorrow our football feature continues. Josh Rosen of UCLA, quarterback in the spotlight. We'll be back tomorrow at 1. Bob and Chris on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.